when my son Aiden was about 18 months old, I was diagnosed with an incurable lung disease that is often fatal in a couple of years. And I, you know, can't understate how much that rocks your world. I think any mom who's, you know, facing a future with their kid that they hadn't planned on can understand that gut feeling. And I wasn't able to, I didn't want to accept the status quo. I wasn't content with what the medical journal said was going to happen to me. And so I set out to change it for myself, where no matter how long I had, whatever that ultimately looked like, I was going to make my days the best possible.
Welcome everyone back to the Grit and Moxie podcast, where we are celebrating women's witness, fitness, and gritness. I'm your hostess, Christine D'Souza. Welcome everybody back to the Grit and Moxie podcast. Today I have Colleen Brunetti here. She is like a celebrity in our household. She is the author of a couple of children's books and one that gets read every night, basically, in our household. And I'm so excited for you to meet her. But before I introduce her to you, I want you to learn a little bit about her. So here is just a little bit more of her story. She grew up in the rolling green hills of Vermont, where she spent much of her time devouring books. That love of reading first led to a career as an educator and later as a writer. From freelance work for clients, big and small, to blogging for herself, to publishing finished books, life is meant to be explored with gusto, and the written word is part of how she does that. She'll always be an artist at heart. Dance, primarily classical ballet, was her sport, and musical theater makes her soul happy. She loves to dabble in crafts and digital arts. And finally, she illustrated her first book in 2020. After years of figuring out how to get her own work into the world, she has begun mentoring others, beginning authors to position their books for success and build a long-term brand. And she would love to help you too. We're going to talk more about that later. But on a regular day, you can find her in Connecticut chasing around her two kids, a variety of pets, and figuring out this crazy ride we call life. Thank you, Colleen. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Wow, it's my pleasure. Like I said, you're a little bit of a celebrity in our household. The first time I actually met you was like a flash like that. It was actually at a allergen free food festival in, I think it was Burlington. Could it have been Burlington?
In Massachusetts?
Right? Yeah, Massachusetts.
Yes, that was, well, pre-COVID times. Yes,
it totally was. Yep.
The Gluten-Free New England Expo. Yes.
Yeah, so awesome. Now, before we get into all of the amazingness that you are up to, I would love for you to kind of set the stage for our listeners. Kind of where you are right now, maybe what the last, you know, year has kind of dished out to you, and just so that they have the stage set so that when we dive into, you know, your book and what you have coming up in front of you, they kind of have a good idea of your setting.
Sure. Well, the last year for me, like everyone else, has been just a wild ride. Somehow the world completely slowed down and then also sped up in brand new ways, right? So a lot of us with little kids found everything upside down. We were busier and more tired than ever, but not going anywhere. So that was certainly my reality. You know, we shut in last March with everyone else, and I've just sort of been trying to get through. But during that time, I did publish my third children's book called Share a Little Kindness. It's a story about all the things that I want my kids to be in this world. And kind is certainly one of them, but also able to speak up for themselves, able to listen to others, able to apologize when they're the ones who need to apologize, and so many more things. And I thought, you know, mid-pandemic, when everyone needs a little more grace, was a good time to get that book out. So that came out, I believe it'll be a year in July. And this year I've been sort of chipping away at another book. I'm actually taking some art lessons because I have a new style I want to try out, and I'm not quite ready to put it out into the world. But in the meantime, I've been starting to coach new authors, which has been a whole lot of fun.
Wow, that's exciting. So the first book, Aiden the Wonder Kid, this was your first, right?
That was my first children's book, yes.
Yeah, first children's book, Aiden the Wonder Kid Who Could Not Be Stopped. So that was illustrated by Dan Karsten. So this second book, is that when you started illustrating your own? Is that something?
There was one in between. There's one in between. Dan and I teamed up for a book called And Pip 2.
Yes.
And so we worked on that one together about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And then for the third one, yeah, I dove in. I wanted to try it on my own. So
yeah, that's exciting. Yeah. I'm excited to add those additions. Definitely, because the one that we have is Aiden the Wonder Kid, who
yes.
could not be stopped.
One that started it all.
Yep, and you'll often find my son, my almost three-year-old, standing on top of tables saying, I'm a superhero, I'm a wonder kid who could not be stopped.
I love it so much.
Oh, yeah, and it's amazing how the kids embody the story. So, you know, your vision and mission, you know, that I've read about, which you can share more on, but it's really, you know, people think, oh, children's stories. But when you're like, no, I want kids to be able to embody this stuff. It's really, you know, they're thinking about these stories. They want to know the stories. They want to, you know, they repeat the story so that they really know it, understand it, and like almost memorize it. My kids memorize them. I don't know if you found that to be true with all the, because you do schools and everything, right? School visits and.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. And I was a former literacy specialist and special ed teacher. So you packed a ton into that statement. Really good stuff. So let's see. So as far as like the little one standing on the table going, I'm a wonder kid. You know, my son, as he is described in Aiden the Wonder Kid, just has this boundless energy that just, he's a motor, right? He goes all day long. Mm-hmm. And he's 14 now, and he slowed down a little, but not a lot. And I really tried to capture that sense of like joie de vie that little kids have, right? That love of life. And Dan is such a brilliant illustrator. His ability to capture motion and humor and kind of put the two together. So that was very intentional. I have had more than one person say to me, wow, it's almost like this character has like ADD. I'm like, wow, funny you should mention that, because that is actually true as well. Something we see in food allergies and intolerances a lot, right? It comes with a secondary diagnosis. So that is all true. And then as far as putting the kids really kind of personalizing and putting that story in for themselves, that I will hazard to say is the mark of great literature, right? Mm-hmm. We want kids to see themselves in these books. We want them to feel empowered by them. We don't want to stand there and lecture and say, this is how we should run our lives, so much as tell a great story and show a great picture and let them make it into whatever their imagination turns it into.
Mm-hmm. And isn't that true for the way adults learn as well?
I think so. I think we're much, much more effective when we're powerful storytellers.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So you mentioned, so I was thinking that this was your first book actually, because I didn't realize that you had another book. I'm guessing then that was the first one talking about your new normal. Was that the new normal? Was that your first one?
Yes. So it's called Defining the New Normal, A Guide to Becoming More Than Your Diagnosis. And this is what sort of launched me into the self-publishing field. I had a story to tell and I wanted it to empower other people. So as a very brief background, when my son Aiden was about 18 months old, I was diagnosed with an incurable lung disease that is often fatal in a couple of years. And wow. You know, can't understate how much that rocks your world. I think any mom who's, you know, facing a future with their kid that they hadn't planned on can understand that gut feeling. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't able to, I didn't want to accept the status quo. I wasn't content with what the medical journals said was going to happen to me. And so I set out to change it for myself, where no matter how long I had, whatever that ultimately looked like, I was going to make my days the best possible through integrative modality. So doing everything my doctor wanted me to do, but also taking care of myself in radical ways. Mm-hmm. And I sort of put that into, it's a one part book and one part how-to journal so that the readers can personalize it as they go.
Wow. So how did you, I get asked this question a lot. I never got a diagnosis like that, but I did have a tumor on my liver that was not, the doctors wouldn't test, right? So for 2 years, I walked around with a tumor that they said, well, it could be cancer, could not, but they didn't want to test it. They just wanted to watch it for growth, right? So I'm often asked this question, how did you find the strength to keep going? You know, where did you get that kind of motivation to put one foot in front of the other, essentially, when you were like, felt like a ticking time bomb?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it was another book. Books are so powerful. It was Love, Medicine, and Miracles by Dr. Bernie Siegel. He was an oncology surgeon out of Yale, and he explores how the mind-body connection can be stronger than the diagnosis and more powerful than medicine in a lot of ways. And what I often will point people to is the fact that when you're doing a clinical trial, when you're testing a medication, you have a set of patients on a placebo, on a sugar pill or whatever it is, right? And if the patient believes enough that they are being treated, sometimes they will get better. And it's the placebo effect. And nothing illustrates to me more the power of the mind than the placebo effect.
Right.
And so, you know, he also talks about sort of facing the hard parts with grace, and everyone has their time. So it's a lot of mind, body, spirit work around what are you going to do with the days that you have? And that literally saved my life.
Wow. And so then you just decided, okay, I'm putting my focus in my days.
Right.
Wow. That's a tough one.
Yes. It's always a lot to hit people with, especially when they're not familiar with the backstory, but mm-hmm. it's still hard. I still have the diagnosis. I still worry, but it changed everything, right? It allowed me to thrive, but it also, you know, catapulted me into this book writing career where I'm 4 books in, working on 5, have ideas for 6 and 7, awesome. You know, and what I always tell people is it doesn't matter what life throws at you. It matters how you respond. And that's what I'm trying to show the kids in a really fun, kid-friendly way too.
Yeah. Wow. But you've pretty much beat the kind of like the time frame that they told you and all of that.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Are they, yep. Are the doctors like baffled, or do you still see the same doctors, or...
I've been with the same specialist since right after the diagnosis. Yeah. He says I'm his success story. We're blessed to be seeing more and more of them as medications and science improves over time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's pretty incredible. I'm very grateful for both modern medicine and the ability to do all the other things.
Yeah. Wow. Amen. And so that's when you started diving into the children's books.
Yeah, I had so much fun writing the first one. It was the hardest thing I'd ever done, and it was so gratifying. I was like, well, I want to do it again. But I didn't have another full-length book for adults in me. I had nothing that I, you know, was driving me to do that. And I was like, I want to do a kid's book, right? So there we go. It was actually a project for a parent leadership class I was taking. It was a class project.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Wow. Well, it's definitely something a lot of people wouldn't even, you know, attempt something like that. Right. You know,
right. So. The cool thing though, is that like anybody can. It's self-publishing did for authors what YouTube did for musicians. Mm-hmm. It opened up the playing field. You don't have to wait for an agent. You don't have to wait for a publisher. You just learn how to create a great product and you can have success, which is very cool.
Yeah. And so how do you get the traffic to, you know, how do you get people to know about your book? I'm sure that's what you probably include maybe in your coaching, right? You take people by the hand and coach them to do the same.
Correct. So I always also tell people at the end of the day, the writing is the easy part. Putting the book together is the easy part. It feels huge while you're doing it, but most of the work is in marketing. Mm-hmm. So I'll do things like go to expos, where I met you. I do, you know, I have a social media plan that I use. I leverage Amazon ads quite a bit. That's made my third children's book the most successful by far.
Really?
Yep. It's a crazy game. Throw a lot of cash at Amazon.
Okay. It turns out well. So that's good.
It does. The reasoning for that is, all the science behind book production, right? So the cover has to be just right. The title has to speak to people. The topic has to be very relevant. The Amazon listing has to be done very carefully. So it's all getting all those pieces in place, mm-hmm. and then making sure it gets delivered in front of people.
Yeah. Wow. Now, with the Aiden the Wonder Kid, right? That's mm-hmm. your son and you're the amazing mom, right?
Yes.
Is that an assumption?
That's a good assumption. That's a good assumption. If you meet us, you definitely see us sort of reflected in the illustrations. Dan had some fun with it. So super smart detective mom, which I think is something every mother of food allergic kids can really identify with, right? We are detectives for our children's health. We are detectives in reading food labels. We are always on the lookout for hidden dangers with food. Right. So yeah.
Now, do you have celiac or any food allergies or?
I am solidly gluten intolerant and have been since the early 90s, like before it was cool and easy to find good food. Before it was a Hollywood trend. So it's been a long time for me. Yeah.
Yep. 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 I have celiac as well. I think I found out though in 2007.
Okay.
Like that. Yeah. 2007. It was getting there. I actually stumbled upon an entire gluten-free Italian bakery in Sicily, just walking around, just stumbled upon it. I was like worried about going there because I had just been diagnosed, and here there was like restaurants didn't know anything, right? About serving gluten-free people. They still look at you like, is it a preference?
Yeah, exactly.
I actually stumbled upon one, and then I got really motivated, and then I developed some allergen-free Italian cookie lines. So I'll tell you more about that at another moment, but that was definitely when there was like nothing, not as much going on here for gluten-free, but it has come a long way. Let me tell you.
It has. It's so much easier now. I remember right after I was diagnosed, just shopping the perimeter of the grocery store where, you know, and coming home with nothing for dinner but cold yogurt. Like I didn't know what to buy. There weren't all these alternatives at the time. There was like, you know, one loaf of cardboard that they called bread. And I just cried. Just like, I don't even know what to eat anymore. It's gotten much better. Definitely.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, I
remember. Now we have whole expos devoted to it.
I know. In the beginning, I just had like nuts and chocolate.
I mean, that seems reasonable to me.
I was like, well, this is gluten-free.
Right?
Yeah. Wow. So how long have you been coaching others to do the same thing with their authoring? Is that something that's like brand spanking new or?
Yeah, let's see. It's just been over the last like 6 months or so. Mm-hmm. It sort of fell into my lap. A dear friend started a small publishing company She was handing me books to do the Amazon positioning for. So there's all these things behind the scenes with categories and keywords. And I was doing that for her. And as I was reading the manuscripts, I was like, hey, I have thoughts how we could improve the way this goes out to the public. Books are wonderful, but you know, there's some techniques we can use. And so she started having me do more of that. And then the people who are published through her, who want further services past what the publishing house offers, I take them over. So, yeah.
Well, that's really exciting. So actually these are authors that are not specifically self-publishing, right? They can be, but these are,
Wow. So she's an indie press, a little small indie press. Yep.
Okay. All right. Very cool. So you said you have ideas 6 and 7. Are those also going to be geared towards kids?
They are. So the one that I really need to get out in the world is called Sweet Pea in the Forever Garden, and it is a story of a wished for child. So it was originally an adoption story, which is my family story. It's my daughter came to us through adoption. And the more I worked on it and ran it through adoptive families and foster families, the more I realized that the sentiments behind it hold true for any family who's trying to grow in untraditional ways. So it might be child loss, it might be infertility, it might be surrogacy, it might be same-sex couples. It doesn't matter so much what the backstory is, that longing and wishing for a child and the sense of what completes your family is something that every mother's heart understands. And every child who comes in these non-traditional ways hopefully benefits from in incredible ways, right? So I sort of changed it to be less adoption centric and more, this is how a family can grow.
Really interesting. I'll connect you with, I actually haven't released her podcast yet, but a woman who she works with women on their fertility journey, but it's all like in a naturopathic way, with like physical manipulation and everything. And she does a lot of work with families that are trying to grow as well. So I'll definitely connect you to, because it is, you hear of it more and more. I mean, I think maybe I'm just in the, maybe I'm personally hearing of it more because of like the age bracket that I'm in right now, right? So a lot of women are like approaching that time where they're like, it's now or never. And then sometimes it's some situations are harder than others, and there's all different scenarios, but yeah, not an easy road nonetheless, right?
But the end result can be celebrated. So you see
Absolutely.
this underlying theme, right? Like here's this really hard thing, and here's how we can repackage it to get through it and celebrate what's at the other side.
Yeah, absolutely. So the name of this podcast is Grit and Moxie. So you've already talked about many things that you've endured situationally and personally to help you kind of get that gritty mindset, right? That endurance, like those calluses. What would you say has been like the thing that has like really turned that key for you? Like what does that feel like for you, and what?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, the diagnosis was obviously life-shaking. I think for me, it was looking at my son, he was 18 months, and saying, there's no way I'm not going to be here to see this through. If I can will myself into a certain amount of existence, I'm going to do that. And that, making that my focus more than the diagnosis and the trials of being in the medical system, and there are many of those, I think is very, very helpful because it gives you something to cling to, even when it's tough.
Yeah, so the meaning, yeah, getting that deep why, right? That deep why that you always hear about. It's interesting because when people, read about that or hear about the why, and when I'm sure when you're coaching people, you're like, you got to know your why. And people just blow it off, but it's like when that why is strong enough, boy, will it move you. And that, that autonomy just like happens more than if you don't.
And for those heart-centered entrepreneurs, people who want to help others through their story, there's a lot of work we do in my coaching with them around moving beyond your why and packaging it in a way where your reader, the recipient of whatever you're doing, understands immediately what's in it for them, right? So my diagnosis story is dramatic. It's scary. It's all of those things, but it's just my story at the end. And if someone didn't know me and they picked up my book, why would they care? Well, I hope they care because I've packaged it in such a way that says, you have the power in you to do these things.
Right.
So it's less about me and more about what I know can do for other people. And that's a big mind shift for heart-centered entrepreneurs who are usually very passionate about their message and have to just relearn to kind of like show other people the value in it.
Right. Yeah. So moving that one extra step, well, it's probably more than one extra step,
yeah.
but step past, you know, beyond just like yourself. Right. So, you know, a lot of my clients are, you know, want more energy, weight loss, you know, that type of thing, just, you know, get a better overall like health. Right. But yeah, when you're an entrepreneur and you're, you know, you have that desire and that drive to reach other people, that's like golden right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. All right. So let's see. I'm not sure if I missed anything so far. Is there anything that you wish I would have asked you that I haven't asked you yet?
Oh, let me think on that for a moment. How about my favorite part of this job?
Yes.
All right. It's getting in front of the kids. So the writing is great. I'm enjoying the challenge of learning to illustrate and format, do all the things behind the scenes, but especially being out for the last, you know, 16 months or so, it's getting a chance to get back into school visits. Even virtual ones would be fine. But starting to get back on tour, you know, hopefully next year. I have two visits lined up next week, outdoors one. So really, really looking forward to that, getting back to connect one-on-one and get back to expos and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Do you ever do any birthday parties or anything like that?
I never have. That could be fun.
Yeah. I had a friend who had a birthday party for her daughter during COVID and it was great. It was outside, you know, the kids showed up, you know, we sat down and it was like a really nice storytelling time. And yeah, it was great.
That's cool. I have loved seeing all the innovation that people have come up with, especially for the kids through all of this. Mm-hmm. So we did a drive-up birthday party. You signed up online for a 15-minute slot and you pulled in and they had the kids at opposite ends of the table. They did a craft and then you took a cupcake in its little individual case and took it home. So everybody got to see the birthday girl do something, grab a cupcake, and we never crossed paths with anyone else. I was like, really, that's so creative. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. So what is the funniest thing a kid has ever said to you after reading?
My niece, actually, I read her, Me Too set or Aunt Pip Too. And, she started giggling and she goes, if I hear that story again, I'm going to pee my pants. Very high compliment. And Pip too, I've set out to write as pure comedy. So I was like, all right.
Oh my gosh, that's great. That's all right. Now I know I'm jumping backwards in time.
Okay.
But I wanted to go back to the food allergy piece because I do definitely have a lot of listeners that struggle with food allergies for themselves, right? And or autoimmune, right? Which
yes.
There's a lot of connection there, or with their kids. So I am curious. I know we kind of like read about it in Aiden the Wonder Kid Who Could Not Be Stopped, but you mentioned that some people thought that, asked if Aiden from reading the story had ADD.
Yes.
And I think that a lot of people don't know that behavior can be connected to food allergies, food intolerances, and that sort of thing. So I'm curious, how did you go about your detective work with that part? Because it's one thing to kind of detect the food sensitivity and then be a mastermind in the kitchen. But as far as taking it to that next step, you know, some people will think, well, you know, they're not getting sick from the food. They don't have diarrhea. They're not having, you know,
right.
even like the fevers for that matter, a lot of people don't connect, right? So
That's a great question. So to answer that, I want to separate out first food intolerances versus food allergies.
Right.
So because my answer does not apply to food allergies. Right. So a food allergy like celiac or an anaphylactic response to, you know, tree nuts or whatever it is, that's 100% avoidance 100% of the time, or the results can be catastrophic, right?
Right.
So we'll put that to one side. So let's talk about food intolerances, which are much more common in things like ADD, ADHD, or autism, any sort of those neurodivergent kids. And in that case, what worked for us was actually doing challenges. So he had a variety of health issues that needed to be addressed by food avoidance immediately. We actually started with dairy, and then we added on gluten at his request because he wanted to still feel better. And over the years, he actually did outgrow his dairy allergy, which was pretty intense for a while. But when we reintroduced gluten, it showed immediately within hours. If he had some, he would have a very, very hard time self-regulating, big feelings. His temper would get higher. He would have meltdowns. And, you know, he was little at the time.
How old was he?
The first time we tried to challenge it, he was probably like seven, mm-hmm. seven or so. We had kept it out for a number of years. And we're like, well, you've outgrown the dairy. Let's try the gluten. We don't want to keep things out of the diet if it's not medically right. necessary. Mm-hmm. Right. And it was night and day for him. And we've challenged it a few times since as he's grown. And it's very clear to me when he's had it. And so because it's an intolerance and we can try it without like immediately harming him, like you would with, you know, celiac or nut allergy, he's also able to feel that, you know, we can talk about like, hey, listen, I let you have that bagel. Now it's 3 p.m. How are you feeling? Uh-huh. You know, how are you navigating the world? And to sort of help them start to self-identify is really important mm-hmm. because as I'm finding now that he's almost 15, he's not under my watch very often anymore. He mm-hmm. needs to make those choices himself, and he needs to know why he's making those choices. So it's a process. But I do find that food journals help a lot when you're first starting to sort of noting those little things.
Yep. Now, did you have any trouble with other people challenging your challenge?
We've been really lucky to have really supportive friends and family around. I do occasionally have to, like, especially when they were younger, stay on top of the school. If the teacher was used to being able to do treats and stuff, or there was a class birthday party, there's so much less of that now. It's a relief for moms like me. But even last year, I was having to email his coaches and be like, hey, just give me a heads up if you're bringing a snack, because I need to do something about that. But for the most part, people have been really great.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Yeah. I just wanted to bring up that topic because I think, I don't want to say it doesn't get enough airtime, if that's the right way to say it, but I think the connection gets missed. And when that connection gets missed, and, you know, the idea of, you know, it being a, I don't want to say easy, but a simpler solution than, you know, continuing down that never ending, you know, doctor trail that sometimes leads to nothing, right. You know, when you can just try and remove the gluten, and there's a learning curve, of course, but that it can just do wonders. I mean, I've had a similar experience with my daughter. She doesn't have hasn't gotten diagnosed with anything. I had her off gluten for a while and dairy for a while. She did have a dairy allergy when she was a baby, you know, but we did the same thing. We tried the challenges, tried to add it back. And then we even, you know, just got her tested because we didn't want to not be giving her something that she could have. But it's like you said, it's, you know, the parents, they kind of know, you know, if they're aware of that even being a link, and you do kind of the trials, I think you can see, you know, for a lot of kids, the clear the clear difference. And like you said, now, you know, my daughter's turning 5 now. So, you know, now I can have that conversation with her. You're like, if you want to have the gluten, you can, but do you remember what happened last time? How did you feel? Do you want to feel like that again? You know, right. So that they can start to, you know, it's not something that they're told. It's not a rule specifically, you know, because when they don't have a diagnosis, right? Then that helps them not only decide, you know what, I think that gluten is affecting me, is or is not affecting me in a bad way, but then it bleeds into like if you're having too much sugar or like a candy that's like making them not feel good. They become a little bit more aware. And I did, I think it was with this book specifically that I talked about it in one of the podcasts I did recently. I did a mini series on a few children's books, but essentially lessons that adults are still learning as well as kids. And, you know, that's something that I definitely wanted to highlight because it goes undetected so many times and it's, you know, it's not fun. I mean, I know, and you've probably experienced too, maybe having gluten by accident, like getting glutened at a restaurant or something. And it's just not fun. You know what I mean? No,
it's not. I try to tell people too, you know, something as simple as food can be as powerful as life-changing, right? So we have two big feelings around food. One is I should be able to eat whatever I want. And this is how I've always eaten. And so that's sort of the simple version. But when you start unpacking that a little bit, food is central to us as a society, right? It's not just fuel. It's not just satiety. It's not just, I got to get another dinner on the table, though sometimes it is. It's how we celebrate everything. We have special things that are served at stadiums. We have special things that are served at birthday parties. We have family meals that are traditions. And those are great things. This is all fun. But then we're asking people to change that paradigm and change the way they eat, which really is challenging a piece of who they are. And sometimes that can be really hard for the extended family. Like, well, this is what we do. We always have lasagna on Christmas. Well, right? And so there is a lot that has to be unpacked sort of psychosocially and emotionally as adults. Now imagine trying to process that as a kid, right? So we can get them to start owning it, get them to start understanding what their body feels like and tuning into those soft signs of like, my joints hurt, my tummy hurts, I'm angry more easily. It becomes very empowering for them. And what a great thing to be free of as an adult, right? Being tied up to food as something that is a threat.
Right. Right. Yeah. So it's so awesome. I love this book, Aid in the Wonder Kid Who Could Not Be Stopped. I'm really looking forward to reading your other ones. And, you know, I love your mission behind this of really like getting to the foundation of teaching the children how to think, how to experience, how to live, you know, early on so that later, you know, we're not fighting to like get those messages in, you know, the earlier, the better, the sooner they can understand, the better. Right. And then maybe I wouldn't have to be doing a series like, well, that we're still learning as adults from children's books.
Hey, kids books are a great tool for adults. I think we should all be reading them all the time.
They are. They're amazing. So I just want to thank you again for your books, for your work, for coming on here and for continuing to share. I know I'll be sharing your information, you know, with anyone that I can. Definitely, of course, across all of social media and everything like that. But even in my, you know, my personal relationships, I'll definitely, you know, have been and will continue to get that out there because I do think it is so important. So thank you for what you're doing. And I'm excited to see, you know, what else is coming up the line for you. So I'll definitely keep on my radar. We'll stay connected and
likewise.
Yeah.
And I love the name of your podcast, by the way. When you messaged me, I was like, yes, I want to do that one. It's such a great title.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, all of your information is going to be posted below. So everyone definitely check out her website, get the books, read them to your kids or read them for yourself. And spread the word. If your schools, you know, if you're on a PTO, PTA, PTO, I think they call them both, right?
Either one.
Depends on the district. Your libraries, you know, anyone that you're in connection with, definitely spread the word and share. And I'm sure that your inbox is open, right? That might be
it in the sure is. Box. Yeah. Easy to find me on social media. It's all under Colleen Brunetti, or email findcoach@colleenbrunetti.com.
All right. Excellent. And all that will be in, all that information is down below as well. So thank you again. And I'll be having you on again, I hope, in the future, talk about your upcoming events.
I would love that. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you are so welcome. My pleasure.
Thank you for spending your time here with me at the Grit and Moxie podcast. If you want to hear more about honoring your body through health and wellness, visit christinedesouza.com, where you can find resources, on-demand classes, and programs all designed to help you show up as the mom you want to be, lose that baby weight, get that energy and that mental clarity that you have been missing. Most of all, that is where you can connect with me directly and set up a free health strategy call where we can talk about how this all applies to you and your life specifically. I'll see you there.